Ask 10 Coloradans what the Poudre River means to them, and you're likely to get 10 different answers. The 126-mile-long river in northern Colorado is a critical drinking water source for 330,000 people. It supports 185,000 acres of irrigated and dry agricultural lands. It's the lifeblood of several local industries, and it's beloved by fishermen, rafters, kayakers, and nature enthusiasts alike. The river's watershed is as varied as its fans, sporting everything from rugged mountains to forests to pasture land to asphalt streets. And all of it is under persistent and emerging ecological threat. Fires now burn longer and hotter, scorching the landscape and setting the stage for devastating erosion events. And increasing pressures from agriculture and urban activity imperil water quality. Perfectly positioned to help meet these challenges is the Coalition for the Poudre River Watershed, a local nonprofit with a mighty staff of five, harnessing the power of an engaged community to forge collaborative efforts with municipalities, county and federal agencies, universities, private landowners, volunteers, and others to protect the river and its Rhode Island-sized drainage. From pre-fire mitigation to post-fire restoration, from low-tech beaver dam analogs to high-tech water quality monitoring, CPRW is creating a model for successful stewardship in a rapidly changing environment. And now, with a $9.6 million community wildfire defense grant in hand, the group is poised to do even more with its stable of partners to restore and preserve the Cashlapoudre River and its watershed. Hi, everyone. Welcome to Aquapod, where we share water monitoring stories from the field. I'm Helen Taylor, content manager with In-Situ. And today, I'm pleased to be here with Corey Dick, watershed project manager with the Coalition for the Poudre River Watershed. CPRW was established as a nonprofit in 2013 in the wake of devastating wildfires that burned more than 95,000 acres in areas above and around the Cashlapoudre River in northern Colorado. The group's goal is to provide leadership and coordination of collaborative stewardship of the watershed. To that end, CPRW successfully partners with a diverse group of landowners, government agencies, water utilities, and nonprofits to address some of the biggest challenges facing the watershed and help protect the iconic Cashlapoudre River. Programs include wildfire mitigation, restoration projects, a community science and water monitoring program, reforestation work, and resiliency planning. The group uses In-Situ equipment in its monitoring program, and they're right in our own backyard, so we thought it would be nice to have them on the program, especially because they're working to address critical issues so many other regions of the country and the world are also dealing with. So without further ado, Corey, welcome to Aquapod.
Hi, Helen. Yes, thank you so much for having me. Very excited to be here.
Yes, wonderful to have you. Before we dive into CPRW's work, could you just please characterize for us the Poudre River watershed, where it is, what it is, and what makes it special?
Yeah. So the Cashlapoudre River, or Poudre River, is the only wild and scenic river in Colorado. Its headwaters start in Rocky Mountain National Park, and then it flows about 126 miles down through the Poudre Canyon, through Fort Collins, Windsor, Greeley, and then it eventually meets up with the South Platte River just outside of Greeley, Colorado. Its watershed, the area that CPRW, or the Coalition for the Poudre River Watershed, where we work, is about 1.2 million acres in size. So that means the drainage, the watershed drainage, is just a little bit bigger than Rhode Island and smaller than Delaware.
Wow. Okay. Well, that really paints a picture. So now we have kind of an idea of where we are. So share with us a little bit about CPRW, more specifically about its function as a coalition in particular.
Yeah. As you said in the introduction, the Coalition for the Poudre River Watershed started at first as the High Park Restoration Coalition in 2013. And this formed as a result of the Gila Gulch and High Park fires. These fires burned in 2012, but then in 2013, extreme runoff, large amounts of erosion, and a lot of lower watershed, so flooding in Fort Collins, Windsor, and Greeley occurred. And so this was a call to action for many of the natural resource organizations here in Larimer County and Weld County. So the city of Greeley, city of Fort Collins, county businesses, education personnel, they all form to create priorities and a strategy for restoration, which that at that time was the High Park Restoration Coalition. Then in 2014, the organization shifted to CPRW and its 501c3 nonprofit status. And that's where we are today. So our mission today is to continue what we started in 2013, which is to improve and maintain the ecological health of the Poudre River watershed. And that's through community collaboration. We started as a coalition, which means we really rely on multiple organizations to come together, work together to accomplish our goals.
Great. And we are having this conversation in the wake of the Alexander Fire, which was just a week or so ago, right? It scorched about, I think, nearly 10,000 acres in the region. So how has the frequency and scale of the fires in our area shaped your work?
Yeah. What we've been seeing, fire in this landscape in northern Colorado and in the West in general, fire is a natural process on the landscape. We are in a fire-driven ecosystem. Fire creates change, and it actually creates healthy ecosystems when it burns at that well-functioning severity that we used to typically see on the landscape. In recent years, especially in 2012 and 2020 with the High Park Fire and the Cameron Peak Fire, we've been seeing a lot hotter and a lot larger fires than what we would typically see in this ecosystem. And so what we're calling these are like these mega wildfires, these very high, intense, hot fires that scorch the land instead of just clearing out the duff and the litter, as you would say, or like the immature trees. They're actually burning, all the mature trees and all the seeds and cones up as well. And so that's kind of changed what we're seeing on the landscape. The fire comes through and it creates a hydrophobic hillside. You lose all of your soil retention for water and moisture soaking into that aquifer. And so what we're seeing is all the water and these large rainfall events that occur after the fire, you get a lot of flooding and you get a lot of erosion events that affect water quality downstream. So in Fort Collins, in Greeley, and in the towns where we rely on drinking water or rely on agricultural water.
Yeah, and there were county warnings just this past rainy weekend that we had about flooding in the burn area.
Yeah, exactly. So the Alexander Fire, the fire occurred for about 2 weeks, and then just right when it gets to like 91% containment, all of a sudden you get these large rainfall monsoon events that occur. And so all of a sudden you have these flash flood warnings and erosion events that could occur. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So fire damage, obviously a big focus for you and your partners. Specifically is required in the wake of these fires to restore and protect the watershed?
Yeah. So a few things that we've been doing, especially immediately post-fire, is trying to restore water quality and mitigate any of these large erosion events that could affect water quality in town. So a lot of the work that we do is we look to protect the hill slopes and try and get the water to slow down and lose energy on the hill slopes before it enters the channel. Because once you get all that water entering the channel and you get a high velocity, high flow coming through an area where there's no riparian zone, there's no vegetation anymore because of the fire, that's when you get these big erosion events and you get these mudslides occurring that can really affect water quality. So what we do is we try and replant on the hillsides. We try and mulch. Aerial mulching was a big thing after the Cameron Peak Fire. And so that's just dropping mulch on the hillsides to help slow down water and keep water on the hill slopes. We also work with low-tech process-based restoration activities. So that includes post-assisted log structures, beaver dam analogs, beaver mimicry structures, which is basically wood in the system to slow down water, help filter the water, push the water out to its floodplain, so that way it doesn't just incise and channelize these systems.
And just go straight down.
Exactly. Yeah. Straight down into Fort Collins or straight down into town where we live here. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Interesting. Let's move out from fire a little bit to talk about the primary categories of projects that the coalition oversees and implements. So it looks like they fall essentially into three buckets. You've got your river restoration projects, forest restoration, and post-fire restoration projects. So let's touch on each of those a little bit, what they involve and how they support a resilient forest and watershed.
Yeah. So we talked a little bit about our post-fire restoration, and that's exactly what it sounds like. It's working in the environments and in the areas post-fire. And so a lot of that is the low-tech process-based restoration right now, so putting wood and putting structures in the stream. It's also our reforestation program. So we work on reforesting a lot of these private lands that were affected by these mega wildfires where we're not seeing pine regeneration, natural regeneration of ponderosa per se, after the fire. Along with that, we have our forest program. And so that is basically the pre-fire program for CPRW. And so that's working on fire mitigation, fire protection, evacuation routes, and just creating a healthy forest so that when a fire does come through, it burns at that well-functioning level, at that level that we expect to see in this area because it's a fire-driven system. And then we have our rivers program, and our rivers program is kind of more focused in the lower watershed, so Fort Collins and down to Greeley. And we work on fish passage projects with diversions to try and create, you know, an area for fish to pass through these diversion structures or around these diversion structures. We also work on general river restoration projects. So after the High Park fire and the High Park flooding, we worked with partners in the city of Greeley and Windsor to come up with the Lower Poudre Master Plan, which is a plan of prioritizing all these different reaches from I-25 to the confluence of the South Platte and understanding what areas are in need of restoration and what areas would be the highest priority for restoration. So we're working through that plan now to design these restoration projects in that area.
Because depending on where you are in the watershed, you're facing different challenges, right? The human impact, animal, whatever it, natural, whatever it is, it's different. So it's not a one-size-fits-all situation.
Yeah, exactly. As I said in the beginning, you know, the Poudre River is roughly 126 miles long, and it goes from a national park all the way down to the confluence of the South Platte. And in between, it goes from slot canyons to rural to urban to agriculture. So there's a lot of different factors that affect the river in many different areas. And so depending where we're working, we have different goals, we have different partners. And so it just changes as you move down the river.
And it's both public and private land, so you really need to work cooperatively with private landowners as well to get access.
Exactly. You know, we have a lot of, like in the upper watershed, a lot of the land ownership is federal or U.S. Forest Service land, but also a lot of mixed with just private owners, you know, their cabins or something like that. And then as you move through town, you get to city municipality ownership, you get to private land ownership, commercial ownership. And so, yeah, working with a diverse set of partners is one of our big missions.
Walk us through a recent restoration project, just to give us an idea of all the moving parts and pieces and the partnership.
Yeah. So one kind of example that we use a lot now recently, because we finished it in 2022, and it's been kind of a prime example of working with a lot of different partners, a lot of different research groups, and it was kind of like an iconic first project in this region that had a lot of that low-tech process-based restoration features to it, was what we call Upper Elkhorn. So it's an area in the upper watershed, about 8,200 feet in elevation. It's in a post-fire environment. It got hit by the Cameron Peak fire. And so it used to be an old beaver dam complex. So it was a wet meadow prior to the fire, and then the fire moved through and the beaver dams became relic. There was no beaver activity anymore. And it was just an area where there was a lot of potential. It was like a clean slate for a drawing board. We could look at this beaver complex and try and bring that back to store sediment, to get the water to slow down and not bring all the nutrients and nitrates and ash into the system, but instead store it on the landscape. And so what CPRW and a bunch of partners did was we looked at this area and decided to put a bunch of post-assisted log structures to slow down the water and kind of bring back that beaver complex. Along with that, researchers from CSU and grad students are working to understand the effects of this low-tech process-based restoration. So they're looking at groundwater wells to see how the water level changes. They're also looking at the sediment deposition to understand how much sediment is actually retained in this area and how much is actually traveling from the upper hill slopes into this beaver complex. And so this was a project on U.S. Forest Service land. So there was U.S. Forest Service partnership, there was CSU partnership, and then there was CPRW partnership. So it's one of those examples that we really like to highlight because of the numerous working parts and organizations that were involved in this project.
And are you at a point where you're seeing results?
Yeah, absolutely. This is one where we're really proud to bring people up and talk about it and give it as an example of how this is a positive impact on the landscape. I can't remember the exact numbers, but what they were seeing as far as sediment in the last year and a half was about 32,000 cubic feet of sediment retained on the in-stream and on the floodplain. Which is about, I think that we estimated to be about 900 dump trucks or so.
Wow. So these things can be measured.
Yeah.
Yeah. Actually see the change.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. You can actually see the change and yeah, you can see it in only about a year and a half as well. I mean, there's, I remember going up there immediately after the installation and then going up one flood season later and seeing a lot of these post-assisted log structure, these wood structures, you know, half buried in sediment and actually seeing the sediment storage that's occurring in this area.
That's great. I want to talk about your community science group and the work that they're doing. They, as I understand it, are using in situ equipment to collect water quality data. Maybe just tell us a little bit more about the program in general and then, you know, where they're monitoring and to what end.
Yeah, so starting in 2019, we had about 10 volunteers begin as our community science program. And so what these volunteers do is they form up in partners, like groups of two, and they sample roughly 5 regions, we say, of water quality monitoring in the Upper Poudre watershed. And so in these 5 regions, we have about 33 sites every season where these volunteers are going out and collecting grab samples, water grab samples that are being analyzed by Rocky Mountain Research Station, as well as point samples with the In-Situ Aquatrol 500. And so this is a water quality monitoring sonde that the volunteers can go out and use. They're very easy to learn equipment and easy to maintain. And the volunteers love being able to go out and collect, you know, science in real time for us and collect this data that we use to understand changes in water quality, signs that there may be an effect occurring in the watershed, especially post-fire from what we've been seeing here.
So what parameters are they measuring and why those?
Yeah, so we're doing what Rocky Mountain Research Station is analyzing is a full panel of water quality analysis. And then the In-Situ Aquatrol 500s have pH, temperature, nitrates, rugged dissolved oxygen, and the ORP oxygen reduction potential. And these are just great initial indicators of change in the system. And so we can understand, you know, if we're going out on our monthly sampling and we see a 2 months of a large variance in these indicators, then all of a sudden we know that, something's occurring upstream. There was a fire upstream or the prescribed burn had an effect or some other variable is affecting the water quality.
And I guess because they're collecting data with the sonde and they're also doing grab sampling, they compare those?
Yeah. So the reason we have a full panel is we are assessing those or collecting that data and compiling it and analyzing it throughout the winter. But to get real-time data kind of like in the moment and having to be being able to analyze that data, you know, the next day, we can do that with the sans, with the in-situ sans. So unlike the full water quality sample, you know, which takes a lot of time to analyze and collect the data and then go through and compare results, the in-situ sans, we can collect that data immediately and then the next day map it out and compare from what we had the previous month or something like that.
Right, right. And the water quality data is just one piece. You were talking about measuring sediment retention and things like that. So how is the data, how is the water data used with other information to kind of give the full picture of the health of the watershed and who gets to use it?
Yeah, those are great questions. So our community science program initially started to compare the effect of prescribed burn versus large fires. So for example, using prescribed burn as a way to mitigate large mega wildfires versus the effect of like the High Park fire on water quality. We started that in 2019, but then in 2020, we had the Cameron Peak fire. So it changed from understanding prescribed burn to understanding what the Cameron Peak fire effect was on water quality as well. Since then, we've shifted our goals a little bit since we've been collecting data from the Cameron Peak fire for 4 years now. We've shifted to collecting both baseline data, but then also fire mitigation effects still. So mechanical thinning, prescribed burning, pile burning, as well as these in-stream structures that I've mentioned before. So understanding what these PALs and what these beaver dam analogs, what effects that they have on water quality as well. So are they storing enough sediment above the project site and then below the project site to have a difference in water quality? And so that's some of the data that we're collecting. We're sharing that, you know, with Colorado State University, with Rocky Mountain Research Station, but then those organizations as well have their own baseline monitoring system, or in terms of CSU, you know, they have their own SON network up in the watershed as well. And so, you know, we're talking to CSU to ensure that we're collecting data in different locations compared to their SON network, but also that we're sharing the data so that we know what's going on in the watershed as a whole. So that it kind of paints that entire picture of what's going on. So it's not like we're not siloing these projects to be, you know, standing alone and not having an understanding of the entire watershed as a whole. Because it's a watershed, you know, all the different facets such as forestry, post-fire, river, they all affect the different areas. And so making sure that, you know, the in-situ SON network knows what's going on in the post-fire realm, or we know what's going on in the in-situ SON network. It's just, it's one of those where it highlights our collaboration and our coalition, for example.
Yeah, I can imagine it's helpful in some respects, reassuring. I mean, what a boost to know that CSU has got all of those permanent installations up and down the river collecting data continuously, that's telemetered right to their lab and shared with the city and shared with all these partners and with you to support your work. I mean, that's valuable, I would imagine. Yeah.
And so we, you know, we really appreciate and we value these relationships and this collaboration that we get on these projects.
Is it a natural collaboration? I mean, you know, it's you have to decide where to put your energy, right? And in theory, collaborative efforts sound fantastic, but I imagine there are a few challenges along the way.
Oh, absolutely. You know, that's one where, you know, collaboration is, I feel like, one of those buzzwords these days where everybody wants to collaborate and, mm-hmm. you know, wants to work together. But it does have its time and it does have its place. And it depends on the project. You know, certain projects just may not work with certain partners. Alternatively, other projects are a perfect fit for some of our partners. And so I think it just comes down to understanding, you know, the goals, the values, and the specific projects to understand who's going to collaborate on which project.
So what is CPRW's particular strength that makes you such a great facilitator of these various projects and getting the right folks involved?
Yeah, I think, you know, I think especially working with the municipalities, with the county agencies and with the federal agencies, we have that flexibility being a nonprofit to go after grants on private lands, on public lands, but then also being able to write in the collaboration with these municipal agencies or these federal agencies. Alternatively, when we work with private landowners or private businesses or anything like that, we have that flexibility on the other side that we have the partnership with the municipalities already, and we can work with them to work with private landowners. And so I think CPRW has been a great, you know, middle person in that realm of natural resources here in Fort Collins and in the Poudre watershed, where we can bring together all these different agencies to work together. And CPRW is kind of that core behind that.
Right.
You know, we work not only bringing together for the specific projects, but we have our, you know, resiliency plans, our Lower Poudre Master Plan, our Upper Poudre Resiliency Plan. You know, we work on that to prioritize the project areas. And so having those plans in our back pocket to say, okay, when we get, you know, the right partners together, we can work on these specific high priority projects.
You have a really clear path on how to move forward.
Exactly. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. We kind of have that guiding light.
Mm-hmm. Well, speaking of grants, obviously funding is essential and you guys are pretty good at that too, I think. I read that just this past May, the USDA awarded CPRW and Larimer County a $9.6 million community wildfire defense grant. Congratulations. What an honor and responsibility. I'm sure that took a lot of work to get that nailed down. But how do you anticipate implementing this particular winning proposal?
Yeah. Thank you, first of all, for congratulations. But I also want to just take a moment to shout out Daniel Bowker and Josh from OEM. Those two were huge in getting this grant. And so they worked tirelessly for a long time. And so it's a very... very exciting time, but I want to say that those two members are kind of get owed all the gratitude there. So this large grant is going to be a wildfire defense grant in the Red Feather, Cherokee Park, Crystal Lakes, Glacier View area, and it's going to be focused around fire mitigation and evacuation routes and fire education. And fire mitigation education, you know, talking to homeowners and landowners about what it means to be fire aware and what it means to protect the landscape using fire, using prescribed burn, but then also using forest thinning. And this is going to be an exciting time for especially Daniel, our forester, but our forest program in general, and working with a lot of the landowners in that area.
What's the time frame for this project?
Yeah, so we currently are still, we got the notice of award for the funding, but we are still currently waiting on the contract and actually getting, you know, the funds in hand. And so once that occurs, it's going to be a multi-year project. You know, it takes a lot of time to get these underway, but knowing now that we have the award, we can actually start the planning at least behind it. So that way, when we do get the contract, we can start the projects hopefully right away. It's going to take some time to understand where to start and where to go. But we're currently working through that. And yeah, we expect, you know, it to be a multi-year project to help mitigate fire up in that area.
Yeah. And I'm sure there are lots of similar groups and efforts around the country and around the world doing the same kind of work. But this also seems like an opportunity to enhance your role as a thought leader, or, you know, just because you have secured the funding, you've got the partners, you've got the infrastructure to do the work, and now you've got this plan. So is that part of CPRW's bigger mission and picture too, to share out what you're doing for just in terms of best practices and sharing what you've learned?
Oh, absolutely. I always say there's three parts in every project, and that is the pre-planning, that's the actual completion of the project, and then it's the monitoring. And with the monitoring, it's very important to communicate those results with partners and with yourself internally. You want to understand if the project was done well, if it was done incorrectly, or if you can do something better next time. And I think being able to communicate that with partners, with other organizations in the area, or even with organizations across the state, it's very important, so that way other people, you know, maybe don't waste time or waste funds and get something incorrectly done when we could have helped them along. And that's just by communicating our results.
Yeah, because the resources are limited, they're precious, but also time is of the essence, right? There really isn't time to do it wrong, right? Because so much is on the line with climate change and everything that is shifting and making it more challenging to keep healthy watersheds, healthy forests, that you kind of do start to need to get it right the first time.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. And especially when you're dealing with the natural resources realm, you want to get it right the first time, because if you don't, you know, it's going to take a long time for that to rebound, to have a chance to start over again.
Yeah. And I think, you know, just one small example, when we were talking earlier, you were talking about the seeds you use for replanting.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. So in our post-fire realm, in our post-fire program, we have a reforestation project, and that is a collaboration with multiple different agencies in the area to work on ponderosa pine reforestation in the Big Thompson and the Poudre watersheds since the Cameron Peak fire, and especially the High Park fire as well. So what we've been seeing is a very low natural regeneration of ponderosa pine. So our project and our group has planted about 30,000 ponderosas in the last 3.5 years since the Cameron Peak fire. And these trees were planted across the High Park and the Cameron Peak fire burn scars. But one thing that we've been noticing, and I think a lot of the agencies and groups are noticing statewide and nationwide, is a lack of seeds. We're running out of our seed supply because of the amount of large wildfires occurring across the nation. And so locally, what we've been doing to kind of bolster that has been our own cone collection. So that's going out about a month from now, actually, and collecting ponderosa cones off of the trees when they're mature, right before they open up and turn brown, as you would see on the ground. But collecting them off the trees when they're still green and they're mature, and then sending them to a seed cleaner, getting them prepped to be sowed in nurseries, and then having them grown out to reforest right here locally. So that's one of our projects where, you know, it starts with planning, and then it goes to implementation, and then monitoring. Monitoring how the trees are doing, monitoring what our, you know, seed germination rate is. And so, yeah, that's a great example of one of those projects where we like to share our information widely.
All right, here's the part of the show where we get to find out a little bit more about you, Corey. Tell us just a little bit about your background and how you got interested in the ecological health of watersheds, protection of water quality, all the things that we've just been talking about, all the different facets. How'd you get started in this?
Yeah, so, you know, originally I'm from Minnesota. And I went to undergrad in environmental and ecology for a degree in environmental and ecology. And when I was there, I actually worked on a research paper in the Boundary Waters Wilderness Canoe area of Minnesota. It's on the Minnesota-Canada border, if anybody's familiar with that. Great spot to go canoeing and fishing. But I actually worked on a paper there looking at the density and distribution of invasive earthworm populations as an effect of recent fire scars as well. So that kind of got me into the natural resources realm, into the kind of research and monitoring realm. And then from there, I went on to get a graduate degree in fisheries. And then I moved to Colorado for work here at Colorado Parks and Wildlife. And then I got a job with Coalition for the Poudre River Watershed. And I've been there ever since. And it's been fantastic, especially to branch out in my, you know, river restoration realm, fisheries realm, but also now a lot with fire and post-fire.
Yeah. And working with people a lot, too. Not just being out in the wild, right? There's a lot of interaction.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, being a being a local watershed coalition, you interact with people a lot, and it's fantastic. We host amazing events. We were part of the recent Poudre River Fest event at New Belgium, and so we meet thousands of people walking through that have never heard of us before, but we get to share our insight with them, and we get to get them excited about what we do.
Yeah, so it's science and leadership and community. It sounds like a great job.
Yeah, it really is. It's fantastic. And it's something I enjoy doing. So it's really easy to get excited about the projects that I do.
Mm-hmm. Well, CPRW's had a great run so far. I mean, to have this sort of interesting structure, interesting mission, and having success securing funding for these projects, finding volunteers, getting that involvement. As you look forward, what do you think it's going to take for CPRW to remain successful in the future? And what can you see on the horizon that may be somewhat reassuring to you, but also maybe some things that might have you a little concerned?
Yeah, I mean, I think so. CPRW has grown from 2 people in 2019, 2020 to we're at 5 people now. Mm. And we are continually growing and continually securing fundings and grants for these projects. And, with 5 people running or operating in an area the size of Rhode Island, it gets pretty busy.
Yes.
So I definitely don't feel like we're running out of things to do, that's for sure. And although it's really hard to say it, there's a lot of natural disasters and natural events that continue to occur that keep us in business. And so, one of the sad examples recently is the Alexander Fire, and it's things that we're seeing more and more. And so that's one thing that, we're going to be around working on those events. But also everything else that's involved with CPRW as well, like the water quality and our river restoration projects, just working through those to make sure that our baseline infrastructure is good.
Well, Corey, thanks for joining us on Aquapod today. It's been great to have you on, hear about the work that CPRW is doing with your various partnerships through your community science volunteer program, collecting all that important data and working with partners throughout the region. Really impressive. And congrats again on the grant and the good work that will be coming out of that. We hope you'll join us again to let us know how things are going in our watershed.
Yeah. Thank you for having me. It was great to be on here, and I'm glad I could share CPRW's mission and all of our values and goals and projects to all the listeners. So if you want to know more about CPRW, please go to pooterwatershed.org. Check out our other projects occurring, our plans, and keep an eye on our blog to see what's going on.
Fantastic. Thank you.
Thank you.
Aquapod is produced by InSitu. Visit us at insitu.com to learn more about our water monitoring instrumentation and software used the world over.